growth spurts, pimples, pubic hair, facial hair, breasts, periods. Awkward things happen in the transition from being a child to being an adult. Does anyone want to be a teenager again? The thing is, puberty has been starting earlier and earlier. So what does this mean for children and their parents and for sex education in schools? Amanda Dunn is the author of The New Puberty. Amanda, first of all, tell me, what prompted your interest in puberty?
Well, I was health reporter for The Age some time ago, so 2002, 2003. And while I was health reporter, I came across the research being done by Professor George Patton at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne. George has a particular interest in puberty and is doing a really fascinating longitudinal study of it. So I started to report on this, think about it, to read whatever I could about it. And I've really just had an interest in it ever since. And then 3 years ago, I had a little girl myself. And I started to think about what the experience of puberty would be like for her and her friends and how it would be different from the way it was for me and my friends. And it led to the book.
Well, what's the research saying about how puberty is changing, how much earlier it's starting and you know, that sort of thing?
Yes, look, it's a complex area, which I know is sort of a frustrating answer in lots of ways. But what seems to be the consensus is that puberty appears to be starting earlier. So that young girls in particular seem to be developing breasts and pubic hair earlier than they used to.
At sort of what age are we talking about now?
Well, some good data that we have from Australia shows that, and this is a study of over 12,000 kids aged 8 to 13, so by the age of 8 to 9, which is about year 3, one in four girls had developed breast buds, so this is the beginning of breasts, and by 12 to 13, 95% of kids were in the middle of puberty.
Well, what is the first sign of puberty, Amanda, first of all in girls?
In girls, it's breast buds. So
it's not getting your first period. That's not the indicator.
No, puberty is, menstruation or menarche, as it's called, the first period is actually quite a late hallmark of puberty. And for boys, it's much more difficult to tell. It's actually their testicular volume increases, which obviously no one is particularly aware of when it happens.
No, but they are.
And then a bit later than that, they'll get pubic hair developing, and much further down the track, they'll get sort of facial hair, wet dreams, unwanted erections, all of those kind of things.
All those marvellous things. Yeah. How far back, Amanda, do we have data that you can actually make comparisons with to know that puberty is starting earlier?
Yeah, look, that's a great question. And this is one of the great frustrations in this area for researchers and also, frankly, for journalists, is we don't have good data from 30 years ago or 50 years ago to show us exactly, you know, to be able to compare apples with apples on this. But what we do have is some very good longitudinal data from overseas. So in particular, there's a very well-known Copenhagen study and several studies out of the US that show that, and again, these are focusing mostly on girls rather than boys, but that breast development in particular is happening earlier than it used to. Now, there's no indication that the age of first period is dropping very significantly. It's still around 12 to 13. So it may be that puberty is in fact more protracted than it was.
Right, so you have it takes longer. It starts earlier and takes longer.
Yes, but, you know, look, all the experts in this area too will say we need better data, we need more data. We need to know things like how ethnicity, what role ethnicity plays in this. You know, there's just a lot more that we need to find out. But I suppose the point I'm trying to make in my book is that while the physical development is really interesting and it's important for researchers from a medical point of view for them to know exactly what's going on, I guess I'm trying to take a broader sort of cultural view of that transition from childhood to adulthood and to look at what is happening for children and why it matters that it's happening sooner. So it's a much broader picture than just the physical one.
Before we get on to a bit more of that, though, do we know why puberty is starting earlier exactly? I mean, you hear things about, you know, how chicken hormones are influencing
the old hormones in the chicken.
Any truth there?
Not a great deal, no. Look, what we know is that there's a strong relationship between diet and our hormones, and particularly about puberty. So when the age of a first period dropped, so around industrialization, it was about the age of 16, and now it's about the age of 12. So it's come down, you know, 4 years during that time. A lot of it is improved nutrition. We have a better diet than people of that time did, and also lower rates of childhood infection, which have also had an impact. But what we also know, and this is quite a modern phenomenon, is that we in Australia have an obesity problem. And even though it's not exactly clear what the relationship is between body fat and hormonal development, hormonal change, we know that there is one. So,
So we know there is one, but we can't.
There is one.
We haven't established what that is.
I don't think
yet.
There's any consensus on it. So, okay. Yeah. So we know that body fat definitely plays a role, and there are also people who believe that environmental toxins play a role too. The so-called disruptors of the hormonal system and toxins that can mimic the role, for example, of estrogen or of testosterone.
Right, but that also isn't really fully established.
It's contested. Right. It's contested. Okay. Yeah.
There's also, you know, research from the US that talks about things like the absence of a biological father in the house means early periods and early childhood trauma.
That's right, which is fascinating. And this is sort of the life history school of thought. So the idea really is that, and this is actually, it's quite established research, that if, again, it looks more particularly at girls, but if they are exposed to trauma and stress earlier in their lives, they do tend to go through puberty earlier, and they also tend to have their own children earlier. And the thinking behind that is a fairly sort of Darwinian one, really, that the body, that the link between our psyches and our bodies, that when the brain feels under stress or under threat, it goes, its ability to reproduce comes on earlier as a survival instinct.
Right. Well, whatever the reasons, is it a bad thing to be entering puberty at a younger age? Is it a bad thing per se? I mean, it does mean a shorter childhood, I guess, and the likelihood of being sexually active at a younger age.
Yeah, look, I don't think that is necessarily the case, but I think it is, in some ways, it is what it is, you know what I mean? The concern with puberty is really that the gap between children's physical development and their psychological and social development is widening. And I spoke to a lot of principals and teachers who've been in schools for a long time, so 30 years, and they've noticed this change as well, that kids are also exposed to more adult images and ideas than they ever have been because of technology, because of the internet, social media, and the kinds of images that they're exposed to through television. So to me, what's striking about that is that on the one hand, we're quite happy for kids to, you know, have access to those sort of ideas online and images. On the other hand, we continue to be really uptight about sexuality education, or sex ed as it used to be called in my day, but now sort of sexuality education and the need for it in primary school.
Yeah, well, are we still as a culture and within families not good at talking about puberty?
We're terrible at it. And look, it is, you know, it is a tricky thing to talk about. And I understand the discomfort. But I also think that we haven't been well served by that discomfort, and we're not helping our kids very much. So what we need to do, I think, is really start to have a much more frank and open discussion about what's happening and also the way in which we're teaching children about it. A lot of schools are afraid of blowback from parents, especially at the primary level, if they bring in sexuality education. But the truth is that by the age of 12 and, you know, grade six sort of time, most girls in particular are already well into puberty, and it's too late to be starting to talk to them about it then. It needs to happen much earlier in an age-appropriate way so that it takes out some of the mystery and the giggliness, and that also reduces the possibility of it being shameful and embarrassing, which, of course, it absolutely is, and it's a perfectly natural and vital part of life.
Amanda, how was puberty for you?
My puberty was pretty late, Amanda, to be honest. It was, I was pretty late. I didn't get my period until I was 14. And it wasn't a comfortable experience for me. And again, this is another reason why I wrote the book, really, that growing up I always thought, and I did ballet, so ballet is a
like me, you were a ballet girl. So what was that experience like at, you know, sort of 10, 11, 12, 13, when you start going through physical changes?
Yeah, look, I love ballet and I still go to the ballet and I love it very much, but it does have a weird relationship with the physical body, and particularly for girls. And the signs of womanliness, so the round hips, the breasts, that's something that is not particularly welcome within the ballet aesthetic, if you like. And I felt that from a very, very young age. And in fact, when I was in year seven and I hadn't even started to go through puberty really, I probably had breast buds, but that was about it. My ballet teacher used to weigh me every Monday after school. And that was a terrible experience for me. I used to be just, you know, mortified about whether I'd lost weight or I wouldn't eat for the whole day. It was a really stressful thing. And
well, this is an experience that I can entirely relate to, Amanda, to Amanda's here. A bit later into my teens, when I was at full-time ballet school, we were publicly weighed every Friday afternoon, had to queue up and get on the scales. But have you been able to shed the sorts of body images that experience created for you?
No, I wouldn't say that I have managed to do that at all. I still struggle a great deal with my weight. My weight goes up and it goes down, it goes up and it goes down. And I'm very, very mindful of not passing on my body image issues to
daughter. With your daughter.
That's right. I don't want her to feel that way, because it does have a huge impact on our self-esteem, on our sense of ourselves, on our idea of the place that we have in the world and what's valuable about us. So, and one of the things I look at in the book is this idea about, you know, the girls, the focus on the don't you look pretty, the pink and the fairy and the, you know, all of that kind of princessy stuff that is abounds for young girls at the moment. And we need to shift that conversation a fair bit away from what they look like to who they are and what they're doing.
Well, puberty, Amanda, can be a quite anxiety-provoking time for parents. It's all ahead of you. What do psychologists say about the reason why adolescents withdraw into themselves during those development years, and perhaps even younger now? And when should parents worry about it?
Yeah, look, this is a conversation that comes up time and again with parents, is that they are frustrated and probably even feel hurt when their teenagers withdraw a little bit. They feel like they're, you know, you only get a grunt from them, or they're the life of the party when they're with their friends, or they're always on social media. But when you try to have a conversation with them, they kind of shut you down. And it's important to know, and you know, I'm obviously not a psychologist, so I'm repeating what the psychologists have told me, is that that's perfectly normal, because what they're doing is building a sense of themselves as individuals separately from their family. They're trying to figure out who they are, what matters about them, what's important about them, what they're good at. And so it's not a rejection of you, and as easy as it is to feel that way about it, it really isn't. And, you know, hopefully, in all likelihood, they'll come through the other side and you'll have a good and strong adult relationship with them. So in terms of when to worry, what the experts say on this is you should worry if they're not different with their friends, if there's no context in which they are engaged and happy and making friends and having good, strong relationships. So if they're surly with everybody and withdrawn, and they don't want to participate socially, then it's time to go and get some help. And the other thing is that, that sort of persistent low mood that we know is a hallmark of depression is a reason to go and get help.
All right. Now, you talked earlier about sex ed, sexuality education. How does that need reforming, in your view, given kids are entering puberty earlier?
Right. So this is my big sort of bugbear with all of this, really, is how poor we are at doing sex ed in Australia. So it is stipulated under the national curriculum, so that it comes in at grades 5 and 6. But states implement the national curriculum in different ways. So that means that if you're growing up in WA or Queensland, for example, it's because sexuality education is not mandated, you can go through your entire schooling without having any sexuality education. And I think that is terrible. I think it's as vital for kids to know about this as it is for them to know how to add up and to read and write. So I think governments need to take a strong leadership role on this and stop being sort of anxious and worrying about blowback from conservative groups on this. We need to have sexuality education that is age appropriate, and that's important. So people get hysterical about teaching, you know, grade threes about sex or whatever, that wouldn't be the case. You would start to teach them about their bodies, how their bodies work, the correct terminology, and relationships, how to get on with people, how to say what you want, what you don't want, those sort of really important life skills. I think governments should make this compulsory, and they should fund it separately so that principals are not scratching around in their school global budgets in order to pay for it. Interesting to note, Amanda, that in the UK, which also has a Conservative government, they have recently mandated sexuality education all the way through school.
Mm, interesting.
We're way behind the eight ball on this.
And Amanda Dunn is the author of The New Puberty. She's also the politics and society editor at The Conversation. And it's always nice to speak to another Amanda. Amanda, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.